They did one on the stop and start last year. That was the first set to do. This set that they're doing now is on the port side. First, the solar panels that you come if you're walking along the truss section. So, just, first spacewalk is dedicated to changing out three of the batteries, adding three batteries and taking away six. And then this next Friday, we'll do the same thing, take out three, take out six batteries and add three. First spacewalk was by Dan McLean and Nick Kay. This one that's coming up will be the first spacewalk by two women. And that will be, again, Ann McLean, and then a new person that just went up there, Christina Koch. So they're going to be changing, they're going to be, their project is to convert six batteries to three, also on the T4 section. So with that, they're going to, they're going to duplicate this last spacewalk. Where they converted from six to three. In the process, their spacewalk involved putting these big adapter plates down. And these, there's going to be missing batteries. The adapter plates are huge. They're about, maybe 30 by 40, inches. And they weigh about 75 pounds. The battery is 400 pound category. Not that it matters much, they're in space, but it's still a lot of mass to move around. So it was successfully done last time. Before they go out to do this spacewalk, the day before, they shut down 25% of the station's power. Again, there's four main sections. They're knocking down that 25% that they're going to change out. Am I coming over this, by the way? This is WS2N.
About 60-65% of you is coming past that, but every so often it overtakes you.
Okay. Let me stand by one if I can fix that. And this is WS2N. Stand by one. A little bit better, Roy. What do you think? I'll copy.
Well, you certainly sound louder. You had a little bit of a 60 cycle hum in the background, but if you want to give it a try for one or two segments, then I'll tell you if the other signal got into it.
Okay, very good. So now, any? There are a total. Four inches wide. And I was surprised to find out each. And they're taking away six is because of six batteries. Nickel hydride. Little cylinders that are well, so they're on the heavy side. When charging pressure, it builds up hydrogen gas. And how copyright?
Unfortunately, now you're only getting through about 20% of the time.
Yeah, one of the things I'm noticing is that I do not hear the extraneous signal on the input. And while Paul is transmitting and an extraneous signal is coming out of E5, Paul is coming out beautifully out of 975, 375. So it's not on the 2-5 link. It's something about the microwave link between Glen Oaks and 975, 375 is not affected. Joel, here we go. Paul, is there a way you can transmit on 975, 375? If you use it in the reverse direction, I'm guessing that that extraneous signal may not be there. WS2N, K2LIW.
Well, before I was going through Selvin, now I'm going back through Glen Oaks. That's really my choice. Back to you there.
Okay, on the last few transmissions, the extraneous signal was coming out of E5, but not coming out of 375. You're telling me that earlier with the extraneous signal, you were transmitting on 975, 375? Back to you, Paul.
Yes, 60% here and 20% on Selvin, so I'm back to Glen Oaks. Don't know why, but that's it.
I understand. So I guess Glen Oaks is the best combination then. Please proceed. KQIW.
Okay, anyway, assembly. And I was telling you about the nickel hydrogen. Little cell welded together. That's really two caps on both ends that are welded together with. That's how they work in aero. There's a lot more than this. Like, and that's why one of the reasons they're much like big, heavy, welded. And of course, the ion batteries are delivering. Powers.
I've never been to any of this in my life. I can do it.
What's the difference that you have here?
I've got a tunnel for USB.
You're going to have
I can become very creative. I can become very prosperous. You fool.
Charge and decharge.
God is the one that opens the door to close the door. God is the one that gives and God is the one that takes away.
On the space station. Quiet.
Paul, you're now coming out of both. The extraneous signal is coming out of both the west link and the east link. Whatever you were doing previously, it was only coming out of one. I'm wondering what has changed.
These walks are, This is a duplication of what they did. Which was successful. The inboard. On the truss section to the starboard side. The external solar panels. Right. It's Friday, but it's first. They'll get it done. Probably take a little bit for the other one. Get in. Board section, P4. That they're doing now. And, put the space world plan. April 9th. And that will be two guys going out. That will be Nick Haig, who just went out Friday. David St. Jacques. Right now we have a sick person. Followed it up. And then you can follow that on the internet.
Paul, the extraneous signal. Am I hearing it on my signal now? What do you think? I wonder what's unique about your particular pad that gets that extraneous signal. Right now, that extraneous signal there is, I think, more than 50% of the time. And when it happens, it's happening on both the western end. Huh. I'm hearing something funny on mine, though, so. See, now it's not. What's unique about your signal going into Glen Oaks, whereas my signal or Roy's signal going into Glen Oaks is not doing it. As I said, right now that extraneous signal is there more than 50% of the time, and it completely wipes you out, Paul. And you're saying...
Repeater, timeout.
You were getting the extraneous signal even when you went into a 975 WS2N, K2RIW?
I'm going to send an email, Dick. I'll explain what's going on, because you don't perceive what's happening.
Yeah, that's right, Jesus, Joe. This should be better. I'm moving antennas around, Dick.
Okay, give it a go.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to Sheldon. What do you think on 375? This is WS2N.
That transmission seemed to be pure.
Okay, where there's a will, there's a way. Well, does anybody have any questions about the batteries on the International Space Station? I put a picture where he's going to put it on roy.ac2gs.com. The two different types of batteries, close up of, let's see, one battery of nickel hydrogen batteries, and another one of you could zoom in on it, and I sent him a picture, and he found one with better resolution on it, so it looks pretty good. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I tried opening the picture that you gave us on your email to me and to Roy, and I get the picture displayed on my screen. It's kind of small and hard to view, and maybe Roy was able to correct that. AC2GS, K2IW.
Yes, Dick, I hunted down the image, found a higher resolution version, cut and pasted it, and it's on roy.ac2gs.com.
Very good. Back to you, Paul.
Yeah, that'll help. Yeah, I didn't know there was a better picture out there. I know what's on there. It's a little different for me. I'm familiar with this, but for a couple of years, these different types of batteries. So, all these batteries, each set of solar cells, you come down with all this into these batteries, and then there's controllers in there that control things. Hydrogen batteries that are in there, when the pressure drops inside, like I said, when it's charged, it's 1,200 pounds. When they go all the way down, they go down to only 15 pounds of pressure. So they can really tell, by reading the pressure of, of when these batteries are completely drained. And they have to do that, by the way, before the astronauts went out on that EVA. They shut the system down at 25% of the space station. And then they basically short out these batteries, through a bleeding resistor, and until they're dead, and then they could work on them. Let me drop it.
I think that this way you're doing now is working a heck of a lot better.
Yeah, okay, very good. So, if you listen to the news conferences, they give you a good...
Looks like I spoke too soon.
...graphics to show you the spacewalk, when they're going to go from point A to point 2, when they... Every little move. But the technical part, the voltages, the amp hours, each cell, I said earlier on, probably couldn't copy me, each cell is 137 amp hours. Now, they're made by a company called UASA. It's A-S-A, UASA. Apparently, I think they're made in Europe and assembled in Japan. They were all sent up on the HTV vehicle. HTV vehicle gets launched from Takashima, Japan, from their launch complex. And they send up roughly one a year, one cargo vehicle. And this particular cargo vehicle, the HT-7, in other words, the seventh one that went up, was docked last September, and this spacewalk had been planned to go ahead a long time ago. But things got delayed. For instance, the one guy that went out on this spacewalk, Nick Hague, him and the Russian, there was only two in the spacecraft, were on the way to the space station, and they had to abort in space, and they came back and landed in Russia. So they never even made it around the Earth once. So they're very happy they got a second go. NASA and Roscosmos said, go ahead and launch back up there. So this time they took Christina Koch with them, so now they had three people, and that's why the International Space Station is back to six people. So, okay, I should probably
post another picture, but I don't know if the resolution on that is any good either. I'm trying to think. Boy, I got a picture of the space station that actually shows the location of where all this work is being done. Maybe I'll send that later today. But tonight, before they went into, at the end of 6.5 hours, one of the jobs that they had, they gave Ann a scraper with this tape wrapped around it. So the reason for it is there was something called, they use abbreviations, FOD, they call it, F-O-D. That's a foreign object debris. And it was located on the common berthing mechanism. They noticed it when another vehicle had left. Notice this mark on the it's called the flange, the face where another vehicle would dock to, and they needed to clean it off or at least check to see what is this stuff, what material is it, is it gasket material, or what the heck is it. So she got a scraper out and this tape, took the tape out and applied the tape without getting anything on the gloves, and then wrapped the tape back up around the scraper. Didn't need to use the scraper. They just sent that out just in case. So they'll get that back into the lab and eventually figure out what that is. So that was all these little get-ahead projects, are on the always on the drawing board when they're doing an EVA in case they get ahead. They got ahead of time during that space war. So it was very successful. They did, take out the equivalent of, well, when I say they, the two astronauts and the robotic arm. Robotic arm actually moved a lot of batteries around earlier on, but then they have to put these big plates in. That's really the job of the spacewalk. Underneath these batteries, they have these big, massive plates, and essentially they call it an adapter. Well, it's really just a big plate. And with a long wire that they have to connect as a jumper wire, because you're removing batteries. You're going from 6 batteries down to 3. So you have this big space that's open and where the jumpers are connected. So this fills that space, and they hook up the jumper. But it serves two great purposes. They're also reinstalling some of the nickel hydrogen batteries. Not that they're going to be hooked up, but they need to put it somewhere. When the HCV goes back, and in this case, when HC8 comes up, it'll be the next cargo vehicle from Japan. When it goes back, it will be taking this pallet filled with batteries, but the most they could bring back is 9 at a time. So that means 3 have to be left behind. So they had this hopscotch arrangement of things that they were doing. Move one big battery, put down a plate, put another battery on top of that plate, and then that frees up another space, and this is what's involved with their spacewalk until they're done. And then after they're done, next week they'll be able to re-energize that portion of the space station. Let me drop it. This is WS2N. Okay, one other topic is, I was going to talk about is the Starhopper. Starhopper is being built by SpaceX. It's a test piece of, a test rocket, really, being built down in Texas near Boca Raton in a place called Boca Chica. Near Brownsville, Texas. And it's a place called Boca Chica. And they built this massive rocket. It's 30 feet in diameter. It's got, it looks like it's probably about 70 feet high. And it's got these three landing pads sticking out of it. And this is going to be a test of their ultimate rocket. Their ultimate rocket is something called the Starship. This is called the Starhopper. This is going to be a test vehicle. But it's the same diameter of what the Starship will be. Starship rocket will be liquid methane, liquid oxygen rocket that will eventually possibly replace the Falcon 9 rocket, the very successful Falcon 9 rocket. But this is the one that he wants to eventually build where he could bring it to the moon. He could fly from one end of the planet to the other. He could eventually bring it to Mars. And this is like his, you know, ultimate dream. 100% reusable. And he's going to be testing. He was going to test it this week, but all the different websites I go to apparently haven't said anything about it, so I guess that didn't happen. They sent out notices to all the people that live down in Boca Chica, Texas, and they said, you know, we're going to be testing this rocket, and, you know, certain roads are going to be closed at such a time, and apparently that never happened, so there might be a little delay in there. And for the first flight, he's only going to put one of his new engines in. Falcon 9 has what they call Merlin engines. They have nine rocket engines. This is going to have the Raptor engine, which has been under development for like 10 years. But, you know, it's new. He's test-fired the rocket engine itself. And the plans are eventually, you know, not for this test piece called the Starhopper, but eventually for the Starship itself to eventually have seven on the Starship. And then Starship will be the equivalent of the second stage, seven of these massive engines. Below that, on a launch pad, you're going to have the what's called the Starship Heavy. And that the Heavy will actually have the same diameter of 30 feet, but it will have a total of 31 of these engines, you know. And so you'll have the first stage go up with 31 engines. 31 engines will come down and vertically on Earth and be reused. And then the Starship itself, which will be the second stage, will have seven liquid methane engines attached to it. That will go into orbit or wherever it's going to be. And then when that's done, it will re-enter the atmosphere and it will come back and land propulsively, you know. And that's his ultimate plan. And right now, he's got to get this thing off the ground. It's the first version of the Starship, which would be the equivalent of the second stage. It's got one engine in it now. All he wants to do right now is just get this thing off the ground with his one engine. I mean, you know, he'll probably be happy to go 10 feet in the air and then lands back down again. If that's successful, try that a couple of times. He'll put three Raptor engines in the bottom of this thing, and then he'll start taking off on short suborbital flights, and then come back and land. This, again, is all taking place in Texas. He's got plans of, he's already built a launch facility in Texas, in the process of it, to launch these things, and now he's putting a request in with the government to actually try to get permission to launch these things from Florida as well. So we'll see how that goes, but I have a picture. I should have sent this picture over to Roy. Maybe I'll do this next week if the thing takes off. But it's really incredible. You know, it's this is all SpaceX. This is Elon Musk. He's quite a character. So that's the story on that vehicle. The vehicle itself, it will have a heat shield. It's going to have tiles, not, you know, the same that the shuttle had, something different. But these tiles are going to be a different design. First of all, each tile is going to be like shaped like a hexagon. This way, you don't have continuous lines going all the way through, you know. So if you have to develop a kind of heat traveling in a, you know, along the heat tiles, it will be interrupted because it'll be a hexagon shape. These tiles with torches, and, you know, you put, you know, a million torches out and tested the tiles themselves. So eventually they will be put onto a Starship when he builds this thing. And he'll only have it on one side of the Starship the leeward side as it comes in. You won't need it on the other side. You'll probably just use, thick insulation. But what's interesting, I found out the other day, I found a good article which described these heat shields. When they do come through the atmosphere, the blunt end is very important. For instance, on Orion and on Dragon and eventually on the Starliner by Boeing, or the old Apollo capsules, when they come through, they always come through with the blunt end. You know, it's not a pointy end first. Turns out that when you're coming back at that speed, it's not like you're flying an X-15 through the atmosphere with an X-15 has a very pointy nose, because that has to do with friction. You know, they're worried about the heat of friction. When you're coming back from space, the heat that's being developed, you're coming in so fast, it's not really, they're not worried about that much about the friction, because you're creating a shock wave in front of that vehicle. And, you're compressing the air in front of you, and that air is pushing away, and then the friction is happening at a distance, in front of the heat shield. And that's why you have a blunt end on the front end. That's why you have a blunt end on a space shuttle, and not a pointy end. And I thought of a good analogy. If you take a piston, and you take any kind of air, you just fill this chamber up with air, and take a piston and push that piston down and compress it as much as you can, chances are it's going to be very hard for you to ever get that piston to hit the wall. You're going to compress that air so much, you're not going to be able to hit the wall. There'll be compressed air in front of you. That's kind of what's happening with these blunt-ended heat shields that are coming through the atmosphere. Coming through, and they're pushing the air, and the air is bunching up in front of you, and they call that a shock wave, and it's creating almost like a insulation between you and the vehicle itself. So that's why you want the blunt end to come through, and that's what they're going to do with the Starship as well. They're going to come through, and you'll see the Starship. It has a rounded front, not pointy, and hopefully he'll be able to keep a lot of the heat away from the vehicle. Naturally, he can't keep it all away, and that's why he's going to use these tiles. So let me drop it for any questions or comments. It's WS2N. Okay, very good. On to the next topic. We have the update on the Spray rocket engine. Spray is an engine that will eventually be put on something called Skylon. Skylon is a rocket eventually being built by a lot of European Space Agency money. But naturally, they have to develop this rocket first. The idea of Skylon is to take off on a runway. It'll be like a hybrid engine. I mean, a true hybrid engine. It will take off on the runway like a jet. It's going to be powered like a jet engine. It's going to be have hydrogen fuel, but you're going to have air that's being sucked in, with these turbines and everything, and it's going to take off and start going up into the atmosphere faster and faster. But eventually, it's got in the front of it this cooler, pre-cooler, to bring the friction of the air down to hundreds of degrees in milliseconds. And by doing that, they're going to use the oxygen in the upper atmosphere. They're going to use the air to keep the combustion going. And then once they get a little past Mach 5, or five times the speed of sound,
all the valves and everything's going to close off, and it's going to switch to liquid oxygen on board the engine. And this is called the Sabre engine, the synthetic air-breathing rocket engine. It's been under the development actually for, you know, forever. I know they've been working on it in England, a place called I believe it's called what's the name of it? It escapes me now. They just opened up a facility in Colorado to test all this stuff. Reaction Engines is the name of the company that's building this, and they keep getting funded by these different companies. BAE, I think it is. Now Boeing wants to pour money into it, and apparently they've done a couple of proof of concepts on the engine, and you know, brought it up to thrust, and apparently they're very happy with it. So the investors are starting to go into the Sabre engine, and if that works out, they'll start designing the Skylon engine, which would put two of these engines on, you know, put one on one wing, one on the other, and that would be able to originally bring cargo up, and then they figure in the future they would be able to put people on board. So that's pretty much it for now. There's other space topics, but let me just stand by for any comments or questions. This is WS2N.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions, Paul. Now that you've got a total of 6 astronauts on the International Space Station, if an emergency occurred and you've got to bring them back to Earth, are there enough Russian vehicles docked to the International Space Station that could take all 6 astronauts back down in the worst-case situation? Over to you, Paul, K2LIW.
Yes, yeah, right now you have you have a Progress vehicle that's loading up with trash, and in fact, that one Progress vehicle, I think in a couple of days they're going to fly the engines. They're going to use up some of the fuel, not so much to raise the height of the International Space Station, but they're trying to get it just right where you have another Progress vehicle that's going to be going up in the beginning of April, and they would like to have this exactly where the space station exactly where they need it, because if it goes up, if it launches when the space station is just in the right location, they can make it there in 3 hours. Now, if they can make it there in 3 hours, they are able to use less fuel and theoretically more payload. So, and then of course eventually they can get the crew up there in 3 hours. For instance, the last crew that went up took a Soyuz spacecraft, and they made it up there in 6 hours a couple of weeks ago. But yes, they have 2 Russian Soyuz vehicles docked to the International Space Station right now. So this way there's 3 seats in each one, 6 people on board, and they're able to get home in case of emergency. Dick, back to you.
Okay, so that's by way of the 2 Soyuz, and that doesn't require a Progress for them to come back down, although that's an alternate, if I understand correctly. The full-blown 30-foot diameter space, not the space hopper, but the full-blown object, 30 feet in diameter. Wow. That vehicle, what is the payload capability of that overall vehicle when it's finally developed, Paul, K2IW?
Oh, that'll be 100 tons to orbit. 100 tons. Yeah, and the Progress vehicle, that's just cargo, and that's it. And then after they're done with that, that just burns up in the atmosphere. The Soyuz, of course, you know, makes it all the way back to Kazakhstan with the crew on board. But yeah, the Progress vehicles just bring stuff up, and then they'll use it for a boost, and they'll use it for a big garbage can, and that will burn up over the Pacific. But yeah, the this 30-foot diameter thing, When completed, you're going to have that they call it the Heavy. That's the first stage with the 31 engines, and then on top of it, you're going to have the Starship. They call it the Starship, and that's the one that they're actually building first, and that will have 7 engines. Thrust on the main engine, on 31 engines, they figure will be around a little over 14 million pounds of thrust. So to give you an idea, Saturn V, when they sent Neil Armstrong to the moon, was 7.5 million pounds of thrust. So it's almost double the thrust of Saturn V. Liquid methane, liquid oxygen. Back to you, Dick.
And once again, how many pounds did you say could go to orbit? Did you say 100 tons? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what he wants to be able to, with the booster, yeah, he could put 100 tons into orbit. No problem. That's the design. And this way he could refuel. See, his goal is to put this, all right, now you got the Heavy that he's calling the Heavy, the 31 engines. That comes back and lands autonomously, and they reuse that. And then the top part called the Starship goes up, and we're talking about 100 tons of, equivalent of 100 tons. And that will be able to stay in orbit, send up another Starship type of thing, but a cargo version with fuel in it, refuel the Starship, and then the Starship would be able to completely loaded with 7 engines in orbit would be able to go to Mars they'll start off with going to the moon, but eventually to Mars. So that's the plan, Dick.
And that can bring a payload of how many pounds to the moon, Paul? Go ahead.
Well, it's I think the Starship is going to be 100 tons itself, so I would imagine the whole thing, he's got plans on landing the Starship vertically on the moon, it's going to go, vertically land on the moon and then take off from the moon, like the old 1950 movies.
And so he's not going to be using Lunar Orbit Rendezvous? I thought the Lunar Orbit Rendezvous was a lot more efficient, whereas the rocket going down to the moon is a very inefficient system. That's why I thought the Lunar Orbit I thought that's the reason that was developed, because it's a lot more efficient. Paul, go ahead.
It is, but it's a throwaway system, and this guy doesn't want to throw anything away, That's the whole idea. He wants to be able to, actually he's really building this to go to Mars, but, he will go to the moon. I've seen, animations of what he would like to do. But, yeah, he would like to, let's say he goes to the moon, lands vertically on three tails, then take off again, bring this whole spaceship, he's calling it the Starship, all the way back to Earth. Deorbit's got its own heat shield, and then it's going to come back and land on Earth, whether this happens or not, I don't know. But this is his long-term plans. He's made a lot of plans. He always, for instance, he wanted to land the Dragon propulsively, and still wants it in the future. The one with the crew on board, but he changed to 4 parachutes, and they're landing in the Atlantic Ocean. So, his future plans might change, but it's not going to change the thrust of these engines. He's building the Raptor engine. Each Raptor engine is going to be when he's done, it's going to be over 400,000 pounds of thrust. The Merlin C engine that he has on all the Falcon 9s now, it's a little over 200,000 pounds of thrust. So it's like twice the, each engine is going to be like twice the amount of thrust. He's going to put 31 of these things on the bottom of a liquid methane, liquid oxygen rocket.
Question?
Let's go ahead. Question.
Yeah, Paul, KC1SAM. When this lands on the moon, with the rocket engines being in the lower part of the ship, probably as well as the fuel, how long of a ladder do the astronauts have to climb down to get to the surface?
Yeah, well, the design of the Starship, Sam, is up top. He plans on being able to carry, if he wanted to, it'll be probably mostly cargo and everything when he first starts. But ultimately, he would be able to put 40 people into this vehicle. And he's got plans on, when the door opens, he's going to have some kind of an elevator system to get him down to the surface, whether it be the moon or Mars. So he's got, that's the least of his problems. But yeah, you're not going to be able to. I guess you could climb down if you had a ladder out there. But he's got some kind of a mechanized system where people will be, brought down to the surface, Sam.
Yeah, okay. I was envisioning this. If they can't get down there, there's no sense sending them there. Okay, an elevator. When I think of that, I expect you.
Yeah, I'm sure that's all going to change. Knowing Elon Musk, he'll probably hook up this jetpack and we'll fly you out of here. We'll fly down to the surface. Knowing him, he'll probably want to do that. Then they'll talk him out of it. That's not too safe. But yeah, look what we did with the LEM. They climbed out of there and they had all those big steps they had to climb down on a ladder. You don't realize how big that LEM is until you stand next to it. You go to Cradle of Aviation and you stand there and you say, wow, that thing was pretty tall. They really did need a ladder to get down. Any other questions?
Paul, where there was a proposal to land astronauts propulsively, what is the abort if that doesn't work? In other words, if on the way down you have a failure of the rockets where you're going to land propulsively, what do you do with the capsule with the astronauts on board? What abort capability do they have if there's a failure during that step? Mode of the mission. Over to you, Paul. K2LAW.
I'm sure that's why they changed their mind on that. They have these, they call them Super Draco engines. On the Dragon, he's got Draco engines. They're all your thrusters, And he's got these Super Draco engines. And he's got them, he's got eight of them surrounding, they're actually inside of the Dragon spacecraft. So, since these are going to be used for a possible abort, let's say abort on the launch pad, or maybe as you're in flight, you would launch, light these things off, and it would take you away from the exploding booster. Since you have the fuel on board, you're going to bring this thing back anyway. Why have the weight of the parachutes? They're very heavy. The whole setup for the parachutes. Just do away with the parachutes, and you come down with these, propulsively on these Draco engines. And he has eight of them. So there's pods. There's four pods. So each pod has two engines. He's got to figure it out. Even if one of the engines fails on one of the pods, it doesn't matter. It'll still make it down to the ground. Let me drop it. So he's not going to do that. But on the flights going up, and this will probably be, my guess is probably August when the earliest when they do the first flight, manned flight, that's by SpaceX with the crew version that just went up there, he will have the fuel on board, for the Draco engine. And, it'll be ready to go. When it comes back, it's still going to have the fuel in those engines, fully loaded. And he's going to come back with the four parachutes. So it's a very heavy vehicle coming back. It's loaded with fuel. Back to you there.
And the capsule with the astronauts on board can take how many astronauts with that mode, Paul? Three at a time or even more?
It's designed for seven, but he's going to just have four. That's all he needs to go to the space station. But he says he could do seven. And the same thing with Boeing. Boeing is, you know, they have three of these things built now. The Starliner is not ready to go. We might see the first test flight unmanned. I'm going to guess probably maybe around August for that one, too. But, yeah, the same type of deal. And that also has fuel on board, and that will stay on board all the way down to landing. That thing's going to land on land. It's going to come down and have these big airbags pop out at the bottom. So Dragon is going to land in the ocean, Atlantic Ocean, and Starliner by Boeing is going to land in the Utah desert with these big airbags. Back to you, Dick.
Land in the desert with airbags. I'm not quite sure what that means. With the astronauts on board, is that a bouncing landing, Paul, go ahead?
No. It's going to come down with parachutes. I think they have three parachutes on Boeing. But they're going to come down, and right before they hit the land, these big airbags are going to surrounding the whole, you know, bottom, you know, you got to imagine this thing's coming down on a heat shield. Parachutes open up, you know, drogue parachutes, then the big parachutes, the mains, and then about a mile above the earth, the heat shield drops away, and then as it comes closer to the earth, it's, you know, now it's got these, the undercarriage, it's got these bags ready to pop open. And right before it hits the earth, boom, the six of them pop open, and the thing's going to land on land. And by the way, it has the capability, in case something went wrong and it's going to land out in the ocean somewhere, it has the capability to do that as well. But this way it will land on land. They'll be able to get the astronauts out right away. They'll be able to get their science, whatever. The scientists always like to get their stuff back. Sometimes it's refrigerated or, you know, it's time sensitive. And so that would be a plus. Back to you, Dick.
So the airbags act as a cushion for them, the parachute coming down with the capsule to land, and rather than just hitting hard land, you hit with these airbags. Doesn't the Soyuz have some kind of a momentary rocket blast to soften that landing when they land on land? Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, they have four. Last second, you always see a big cloud come up. So there's four of these rockets that just fired last second. I think they're solid, little tiny solid booster rockets to soften their landing. So I know it's getting late, but I watched a launch 2 days ago. Vega launch from Guyana, which was pretty good. Vega is built by Italy, so there's also an Italian satellite that they put up in space. But I just want to let people know that if you go to spaceflightnow.com, and you could watch these foreign launches if you know when they're going up, and it's pretty interesting. You know, French Guyana. You know, when they're doing a countdown, they're counting down in French, you know. But they always have an American voice also. You know, they have the American link going out, so you can hear everything about the satellite and everything about the rocket, and so on and so forth. The Vega is one of the smaller versions. They have three different versions of rockets that leave French Guiana in South America. They have the small one, the Vega, and then they have the Soyuz. They buy Soyuz rockets, they repurpose it, and they rebuild it for their own purpose. And then they have the Ariane 5, which is the heavy-duty rocket. But it was a pretty cool launch the other night. It was a nighttime launch. Back to you, Dick.
We just hit midnight, Paul, and so I guess we have to stop here because we're about to be cut off. Thank you very much. Okay, 73 to Paul and to Roy, AC2GS, who maybe is going to give us the addresses one more time. Over to you, Roy, K2LIW.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dick. Once again, if you have any questions, if you have any topics, if you have any thing you want to tell me I got wrong, feel free. The email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And the links are up, Paul's pictures and my links at roy.ac2gs.com. Again, roy.ac2gs.com. Just type that into your browser. And thanks to Dick, and thanks to Paul, and thanks to everyone who participated. Next week, maybe we'll talk about the charge parity symmetry violation. That should be loads of fun. Anyway, see you all next week, same frequency, same day.
73, Roy. And I thought synergetic air-breathing rocket engine, Sabre, was a mouthful. We'll be back next week, 73. Have a good night, Dick, Roy, everybody else that participated. Sam, I'll talk to you in the middle of the week. I usually get a hold of Sam. So, have a good night. WS2N, we'll be clear.
That is an awful. Bye-bye, you all.
I look forward to it, Paul, 73. KC1SAM.